This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So we're here with Gene and Randall, and in a moment we'll be joined by Stephen Bassett, and we have a lot to talk to him about. But first, last week we had a really, really interesting episode where Nick Redfern talked about his book, Flying Saucers in the Kremlin, about Russian involvement, interference in the UFO field. And of course, I mentioned, and Nick did too, about the Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. And then somebody on Facebook said, isn't that the Russian hoax?
I guess, yeah, the Russians. It's a mysterious country in a lot of ways, but, you know, what I really loved about Nick Redfern's interview, and he does this every time, is he brings us something that's really interesting with a slightly different perspective on it. And so his perspective wasn't just that, you know, say the Russians know all about ETs or that they have a crashed saucer themselves or whatever, but it was all about how they were using the UFO cultural phenomena to manipulate culture in North America. You know, they've been doing this for a long time, so it's not surprising that they'd want to get into influencing elections in any way that they could. And Nick's point was that, well, you know, why not use this too? It's a huge cultural phenomenon, aside from the reality of the actual situation.
Well, we do know that the authorities were looking at the contactees in the 50s, according to the documents that Nick had retrieved through the Freedom of Information Act. Now, I wanted to bring in Stephen Bassett on this because obviously he's been following the possibility of disclosure by the government for a number of years. Stephen, have you heard anything about any possible Russian involvement?
Well, to be sure, the Soviet Union was investigating the ET phenomena from the beginning, and I think they were quite aggressive in that. We don't know if they have a crashed vehicle, which obviously would be significant in their research. I would guess that they do. And they were ahead of us in remote viewing and psychic research, which actually prompted us to get into that area, which we did. So that's all there. So they're involved. Now, whether or not they're interfering with our efforts to engage the issue, either civilian or government, I have not seen anything to that effect. I haven't read Nick's book, though, to be fair. And I would be disinclined to think that's happening. And the reason is that for them to manipulate this issue in some way, knowing full well that the media could pick up on it, which it did, obviously, in the political manipulations that they underwent, it would be a bit of an exposure for the Kremlin, meaning that it might bring the issue to the forefront. They're not inclined for that to happen now. They're not ready to be in the forefront of this issue. They rarely speak to it. I'm going to go, I don't think so, but I can't say.
Now, the thing I wonder about here is it possible that the major powers, with whatever information they have about UFOs, are going to try to one-up one another? You'd think that would be natural, right?
This is one of the significant concerns, exopolitical concerns, that I have, and I think the disclosure movement should have, is that absent proper information and under the truth embargo, we really don't know a lot. And one of the things we don't know is there a extraterrestrial technology weapons race? In other words, are a number of countries who have had access to ET technology one way or another doing their best to figure out how to weaponize it? And are we in kind of a race about that, which would be very bad? And the public should know about that. Is there a competition to engage formally the extraterrestrials, meaning trying to get an edge on other countries by their relationship to ETs? Don't know. All hidden behind the truth embargo. So these are certainly concerns, but I've not seen evidence confirming that in either case.
Well, the thing, of course, I wonder about here, Stephen, is if we were to somehow be able to reverse engineer anything, and there have been stories about that, we'd be so far ahead of any other country, we could quietly, through diplomatic channels, say, cut it out. The other point, which is maybe gets to a further discussion, is say we have an advanced extraterrestrial race. They're hundreds of years ahead of us, thousands of years ahead of us.
Correct.
It would be like going back to biblical times and handing somebody an iPhone. Could we really figure it out?
I think one of the problems that the general public has, and some journalists, is several problems. One is overestimating the capabilities of the ETs and underestimating the capability of humans. For people that don't have some general knowledge about the edges of our technology and physics, it's easy to go, well, we don't know that much. That's not true. We know enormous amount. And I'm fully confident that we've re-engineered anti-gravitic propulsion and stuck it in some sort of vehicle, not saucer type of vehicles, because I don't think we have the ability to manufacture those, but a vehicle that uses anti-gravitic. We've got that. Whether they've re-engineered any kind of energy system that were in the craft that we've gotten is not less clear. And if we did re-engineer anti-gravitic propulsion, and we've been using it in craft, we could technically, if we had that advantage, use that to, quote, blackmail or intimidate other countries. But let's not forget that one thing we know we have is substantial cachet of nuclear weapons, more than enough to destroy essentially human civilization and send it back 1,000 years. And so, again, under the truth embargo, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what the policies are. We don't even know if anything involving ET technology is even got a connection to the executive, the president, or the White House. We just don't know these things. And this is not the way to run a country.
Well, we can get into a lot of political ramifications there, and I'm trying to avoid the obvious partisan politics here about what a president might know. But I want to ask a general question here, which is, obviously, military and the secret agencies, they have people, bureaucrats, who work there decades in and out. A president is temporary. Would any president, possibly after Truman, would any president after Truman even have the need to know? Would they even want to tell a politician who could disclose it for political reasons?
The simple answer to that, if one is of the mind that we are a constitutional republic, which we are, and one believes that we're also a nation of laws, which we are, then every president has not only had a right to know, but a need to know and a constitutional mandate to know. It's not optional. And so every departure from that was a constitutional crisis. And different presidents have gotten different information as this issue has evolved over 72 years. And that's very complicated history. Grant Cameron's written about it. There's another gentleman whose name I need to pull up that had written a book about the relationship between this phenomena and presidents. And it's complicated. And it's messy. And it's not the way it's supposed to be. When you go there, you're getting into some of the fundamental dysfunction that is developed within the United States in the way it conducts its affairs, both domestically and foreign, due to the pressures of two very significant things, the nuclear threat and the extraterrestrial presence, which by their very nature empowered the military intelligence industrial complex into a degree well and above its appropriate role in place in the constitutional republic founded 270-some years ago.
We have Stephen Bassett, and I'm going to want to ask him in the next segment to go through the history of possible interactions with the presence of ET craft, what they might know, what might be going on. Just want to mention here that Stephen will be one of the speakers at the Alien Expo, that's in Knoxville, Tennessee, set for August 17th and 18th of this year. So, you know, if you're in the area or traveling to Tennessee, or if you're going to Nashville and you want to make a side trip to Knoxville, this is the way to do it. Stephen Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group, of course, a strong advocate for disclosure, and there's a lot of things we can talk about there. with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with Reputation Defender. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with Reputation Defender. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771. For your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with Reputation Defender. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
Hey everyone, Proactive MD has an incredible offer for our radio listeners only. Stay tuned for our exclusive offer that includes a free charcoal pore cleansing brush and free shipping. Proactive MD with prescription strength adapalene can heal and prevent future breakouts. Today, for just $19.95, we're offering listeners the three-piece Proactive MD system with free shipping, plus a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. Get this exclusive offer by calling now, 1-800-583-8662, or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. You heard right. Proactive MD plus free shipping and a free gift, the new charcoal pore cleansing brush. You'll get all this for just $19.95 and their 60-day money-back guarantee. You're guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you get your money back. Call now, 1-800-583-8662. That's 1-800-583-8662. Or go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio. Again, go to proactive.com and enter promo code radio.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon you'll need a plan and place to survive. Forget bunkers. You're not a live-underground gopher. You need Survivalist Camps, the ultimate fully functional, off-the-grid mobile survival bug-out house that's well-equipped and custom-built to outlast any other RV or trailer. Bold statement? You bet. See them now at survivalistcamps.com. That's survivalistcamps.com. Trust your family's survival to survivalistcamps.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We're back with Stephen Bassett. Now, before we go on and talk about the history here, you know, I just looked up on our archive, and we have all the shows online, Stephen. The last time you were on was March 1st, 2009. Two co-hosts to go. It's been a long time. So what have you been doing for the past 10 years?
Well, I took a sabbatical to a Caribbean island for about 9 years and relaxed, drank Mai Tais, and did computer games. No, I got 2009. Okay, well, the last X conference was 2010. And then one thing I've been doing is constant interviews on radio, internet radio, and also television. I'm way over 1,200 now, so I've always been doing that. And I completed the X Conference series, which was six. And then started ramping up toward other projects, one of which was the petition project of the Obama White House, multiple petitions sent in under We the People, which actually got a formal response from the White House. That was back 2011. And then money turned up. One of those things that just happened, enough money turned up to hold the citizen hearing on disclosure. So that was a major development in 2013. And then that was all designed to then be followed up by the political initiative engaging the 2016 election, which got launched. I got to Washington in November 2014. 2 years there, a lot went on. I mean, it was very busy and generated significant developments, all designed to get the issue resolved either under Obama or under a Clinton presidency. And then, of course, that option went away with the election. Since then, it's been a much more complicated path for PRG. I did get overseas for a while. I did give an interview in Moscow on the subject. No one had ever done that before, talking about Putin and exopolitics and the potential for Putin to be the disclosure head of state, which did not get much press. And I didn't push it too hard. I did put out a press release. It's up on my website. I may bring it back to bear. Then came back to, and for the rest, a good deal of the last 2 years, I have been very much focused on the new guys in town. And that is the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, which is, in my view, the most important development in the history of the disclosure movement. And at this point is leading the disclosure movement. So that has gotten a great deal of my attention. I'm not part of it. I do not have formal contact with them, but I am following them very closely. I have a huge amount of material on my website about the TTS, AAS and its activities. And believe that they are the point of the spear, which I thought I would never say. I in my entire career, I never thought I would say one day that the disclosure movement was at that time being led by essentially a proxy group for the military intelligence complex. Didn't see that coming, but that's exactly what's happening.
You're saying then the To the Stars Academy is the proxy group?
That's right.
How so?
Straightforward. Without getting into elaborately into the history, there's a lot of history here, but essentially a group of people within the military intelligence complex, probably focused primarily in DOD, though I think also CIA, made a decision that some sort of proactive measure was required in order to address the circumstances that they were seeing at the time. And this was early 2015. And this started a project, a developmental project that was being put together all through 2015, maybe even to early 2016. And this project was, in fact, to create a public entity populated by former employees of major agencies, intelligence committees, and so forth, including the CIA, including Skunk Works, Lockheed Martin, and, of course, the DOD. People with long careers, high security clearances, NDAs, and so forth. But they were not formally with the government anymore, so they're technically they're civilians. And this group was going to formalize. It was going to raise money. It was going to do research. It was going to bring information to the public from out of the government, which is exactly what they did. And I'm quite certain there's no way that this group would exist unless the support group behind them, which we don't know who they are, within the Pentagon and other parts of the MIC, are allowing it or providing the space for them to do this. I'm pretty sure they have enemies and those inside that are opposed to what they're doing, but whatever, they have enough support to do it. And so, and then when they release information, particularly information that was classified, such as the gun camera footage. This was declassified specifically for them to bring it out. So while they don't say this and they don't talk like this, any reasonable assessment of what's going on, is that they are standing in for a substantial group within the military intelligence complex who cannot be public and are under strict non-disclosures and other restraints to represent the MIC's interest in the disclosure process. We've always known there were people inside government at all levels that favored the truth coming out. They simply did not have enough influence to call the shot. And by the way, calling the shot simply means participating and supporting a president who will call the shot. Because the MIC cannot be the formal disclosure entity. It has to be the president of the United States. So that's my view of it at this point.
I wanted to go over with you, kind of trace the disclosure movement before we zoom on back to the Stars Academy. Now, I guess you would agree with me that the strongest efforts early on for disclosure came from Major Donald Kehoe, because he said outright in his book that there was a silence group within the government that knew the secret, and he was striving with his military buddies to bring the truth out. And obviously, it didn't go over so well. He got, finally, with NICAP, those congressional hearings led to the Condon report, and then kaput. What don't I know?
You know a lot. The fact is that the effort to get the government to do the right thing goes all the way back to 1947. I am sure there were people opposed to the decision to change the Roswell press conference release. But there were some powerful reasons why that had to happen. They were going to change that story. But from the very beginning, there were people in government that would have, if given the power to do so, given the people the truth as early as 1947. And that has never changed. And so there have been two processes simultaneously going on in terms of the what I call the civilian research activist movement. Efforts by people outside and in government to get the government to actually bring the truth out, to end what we now call the truth embargo. It's not a cover-up, it's an embargo, and I take credit for that language change. And the other was to gather information, to gather evidence, to do science. Now, and this was also in the Citizen Science Research Center. And there is, and this whole history is populated by heroes and truth-tellers and great people who have not been acknowledged and will not be acknowledged until after disclosure. And after disclosure, I think that will happen.
We're going to do a break here because the powers in space that dictate the radio spots, that's a bad segue. Stephen Bassett, Gene Steinberg, J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Fellow patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
The heat wave gripping a large portion of the country has killed at least three people now and forced the evacuation of about 250 residents from a retirement home, and also has sparked the cancellation of numerous public events. More than 126 million are under excessive heat warnings, and another 31 million are under heat advisory, according to the National Weather Service. Funeral arrangements are set for a retired Supreme Court Justice. USA's Wendy King has the details.
The body of former Justice John Paul Stevens will lie in repose at the Supreme Court on Monday.
Members of the public can pay their respects from 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. following a private ceremony in the court's Great Hall. Stevens died earlier this week at age 99. He'll be buried in a private service at Arlington National Cemetery, the 13th justice to be buried there. I'm Wendy King.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Alaruth, the Capitalist Evangelist. I'm here to introduce you to a special company with the potential to be one of the great all-American stories. Fortum Resources is a publicly traded, diversified natural resource company with oil, gas, and mining properties in North America and internationally. Fortum is led by Chairman Mark Bruner, the legendary oil man, who built Ultra Petroleum from a 15-cent stock to $200 per share, creating $15 billion in shareholder profits. Mark has 30 years of experience in the oil and gas industry, overseeing contracts with Halliburton, ExxonMobil, and Hess. Fortum has over 350,000 acres of oil and gas resources, and more than half the acreage has been evaluated by world-renowned auditors Deloitte Touche. Fortum also owns the rights to the 180-square-mile City of Gold mining property. Fortum is traded on two global exchanges, U.S. ticker symbol FTMR. Repeat, FTMR. This is a rare ground-floor opportunity to capitalize on a proven energy industry legend. Please visit FortumResources.com. That's Fortum, F-O-R-T-E-M, Resources.com.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that, too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-919-5435. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-919-5435. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-919-5435. 1-800-919-5435.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
We are catching up with a gentleman that we've debated with in the past, Stephen Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group. He's being a good sport and coming on again. And we're asking him to kind of recap what's been going on about the history of disclosure and, of course, what might be going on now, the possible gradual disclosure. Randall, you had some questions.
Yeah, Stephen, like most of us who are in the field already know what you're talking about and your role with the Paradigm Research Group at theparadigmresearchgroup.org. But for those of us out there less familiar with jargon like, you know, truth embargo and exopolitics and the disclosure movement, because we deal with all kinds of paranormal stuff here, can you take us back a little further in time and give us a brief recap of, like, what got you personally involved into this quest with unidentified flying objects?
Yes, which I prefer to call unidentified aerial phenomena or unexplained aerial phenomena. It's not a clever story. There's nothing really special about it. I simply made a decision at the age of 49 that I simply was not satisfied with what I was doing in life, which I fully take responsibility for, wasted many of my gifts, and needed to do something that was important, that was interesting, that had the potential to make an impact. I think by 49, I realized that my basic nature was an activist, and I had dabbled with that, but I had never engaged it. I wish I had. I wish I had become a full-fledged activist at the age of 22, maybe joined the Peace Corps, gone from there. It would have been constructive, but that was not how my life played out. But at 49, I guess matured to the point where I could make some tough decisions. And because I carried an interest in the subject all my life, though I never got directly involved, I had read enough books to have an understanding. So it was always there, and it was on my list of these are a number of options. I could have joined the Peace Corps. I don't know. I could have started up an organic garden farm in California. So there's a lot of things I could have done. But this appealed to me because of the extraordinary possibilities and implications. So in 1995, I really started to think about doing it. I was very much influenced at the time by a John Mack's book, Abduction, which I had just read, and a few other books. I went to my first conference down in L.A. and attended that to kind of see where things were. And I was of a mind that things were to the point where they just might manifest, that we were moving significantly towards resolving this issue. And I think Mack influenced me the most on that. The very fact that he was doing what he was doing, being a Pulitzer Prize-winning, Harvard-trained doctor, psychiatrist, highly esteemed, which required a great deal of courage, made me feel comfortable about taking the plunge. And so I made the decision. This is it. I was very lucky. I knew I needed to go through the right door. Otherwise, it could all go flat real quickly. And I was able to convince John Mack's organization, PEER, in Cambridge, Program for Extraordinary Experience Research, to allow me to come out and volunteer as a development person. I had 4 months there. It was great, but it wasn't a particularly good fit. I'm not a researcher, and I wasn't thinking along those lines. However, it was in May 1996, while sitting in my office in Cambridge, that I had what I consider a sort of personal epiphany. And it all came together in a minute or two. And that was simply this, that the problem with the resolution of this issue has not been, probably from the start, a matter of evidence and science. There has been more than enough science done by the citizen research community and more than enough evidence compiled to absolutely confirm the extraterrestrial presence many times over. So what was the problem? The problem was political. This was a political problem, a policy decision by the United States government to embargo the issue. It used to be called cover up, but that term had to be changed, and I worked very hard to change it, to embargo this issue from formal recognition and discourage involvement in the issue by the public, by the journalists, by academia. And a great deal of effort was put into this embargo. It was not some casual program. It was well-funded. It was quite serious. And until that embargo was lifted, you could pile ET evidence right up to the moon, and it wouldn't matter. And so I said, I'm going to engage this issue politically and seek political resolution. And I immediately, shortly thereafter, left for Washington, moved into a family home, established Paradigm Research Group, registered as a lobbyist, went on to create the Political Action Committee, which is currently in suspension, established a website and so forth, and pursue political resolution in all ways possible. And so I became, at that point, without knowing the term was yet not in play yet, an exopolitical activist, a disclosure advocate, a disclosure activist, a truth advocate. That's what I became. And that's the path I've been on now for 23 years.
Fast question here. At 49 years of age, you change your path. And I understand. I've changed my path a few times over the years. What were you doing before then?
Nothing significant. Without getting into too much personal stuff, but I entered college in 1964 as a very immature kid with a troubled childhood. Not awful, but not fun. And some sort of internal sensitivity to the world around me that wasn't fully developed. And very quickly, the Vietnam War became an issue. As a military kid raised in a Navy family, it was extremely disturbing. And plus, I had immature emotional structure to deal with the pressures of college. So I started out gangbusters with great grades, and then things just started to fall apart. And ultimately, I had to leave school. I then got in another college and struggled and finally got a degree. But things are not going well, and I am not a happy camper. Because from 64 to 1970, when I finally got my degree in physics, I think people of my age, certainly not the millennials so much, remember that those were awful, awful years. This was, in my view, the beginning of the decline of the American experiment and the American, what we'll call, prominence, moral prominence. And I watched it all unfold and absorbed it all and ultimately said, to hell with it. I'm just done. I just don't care. And I had a degree which was not useful. A BS in physics is worth a cup of coffee. You need a PhD. And I just dropped out. Now, a lot of people I knew back then dropped out. They dropped out, they tuned in, and they turned on. I wasn't into any of that stuff. I started just playing tennis and played tennis a lot until I got pretty damn good and ultimately became a tennis teaching pro and played small circuits and just hit tennis balls and didn't think about the hell that the United States was inflicting on other countries under the name of righteous exceptionalism. So I had been politicized. I was a politicized activist with no portfolio. And so nothing was happening. And then I got into business for a while and brokerage and stocks and stuff, none of which really meant anything. But I'm trying to make a living. But it's not going well because I was still very, very unhappy. And so it wasn't until 49 that I realized that, look, you can continue to wander the planet and just do what you got to do, or you can decide to do something meaningful, to have a purpose in life. You live long enough, you mature, you learn lessons in life. And one of the lessons is, one of the most great, the greatest gifts you can have is to have a purpose in this life as opposed to just getting by. And that's how it happened. And it happened to be the ET issue was there for me.
Yeah, because, okay, so like many of us, you must have read the books when you were younger and got the impression that there was something real going on. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe after we come back from the break, let's talk a little bit about exactly how it was, because the same thing happened to me, that the whole interest in UFOs, alien visitation, and so on, became rekindled in you enough to set out on this journey. Just what was that trigger point at that time? Very interesting stuff. Thanks for sharing this with us.
Sure.
Stephen, we'll go into that in our next segment. We'll have you answer that and leave our listeners with a cliffhanger. So you've got to stay tuned to us to find out more about Stephen Bassett and that early history. More to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First game Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug-out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery, and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, long question in our previous segment, you have to listen to it, from J. Randall Murphy of Stephen Bassett, our guest this week. Stephen?
You've got quite a history before becoming sort of dedicated to the purpose that you're with now with the Paradigm Research Group. And this was something that I was wondering for you, because something similar happened to me, actually quite a similar sort of pattern of events. What was it that sort of rekindled you and your interest in UFO?
Well, that's what I was essentially saying. I was telling you that before, but let me rephrase it. But let me add a little bit more context. When I was about 10, maybe 9, I'm not sure, I was going to Sunday school, which is what you did back then. And occasionally we went to church, particularly intense about that. A Navy family living on Navy bases or near bases, and so you'd go to one base to another, and they've got the Catholic Church, they've got the Jewish synagogue, and then they have the Protestants. But they don't have enough money for all the Protestants, so it'll be Baptist at one military base, it'll be Methodist at another. But they all had Sunday school. I go to Sunday school, and it's not working for me, right? For whatever reason. It's just not working. And so I skipped Sunday school once or twice. And then one time I skipped it, and for whatever reason, my father, who was not a particularly happy guy, was in a bad mood that day, and he gave me a spanking. Only time he ever did that. He spanked me for missing Sunday school, thinking that, okay, let me get this kid back on the righteous path. What he didn't realize, in that instance, he essentially ended my engagement of religion,
yeah,
right? Forever.
Yeah.
And so I'm outside that. I'm not affected by that kind of thinking at all. And I started reading science fiction. I love science fiction. It was so much more interesting than any books in school. And I immediately was drawn into that. I love it. Because these are some classic science fiction back in the late 50s or 60s. Heinlein, Asimov, you name it. They were considered some
Clark.
Of the greatest.
Oh,
Clark.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm loving that. And so my head's up in the space and dealing with ETs and or similar, you know, that material, quite comfortable with it. So now when I started seeing articles about the UFO issue, which was that's what it was at that time. It's all UFOs. I would read the article and just put two and two together and go, oh, yeah, there's extraterrestrials here. That's cool. And it'll be really nice when the government tells us about that.
Yeah, so you never had any of this sort of psychological barrier going on, like, oh, my God, we can't be visited by aliens from off-planet or the mm-hmm. whole world will fall apart. For you, it was a very natural thing.
Exactly. Why? Who knows? Doesn't matter. There's 300 million people in this country. I don't know how many there were back then, probably about 120. Everyone with a different worldview. And so when you take something, a subject of this significance, and you put it in front of 120 million people, you're going to get 120 million different responses covering a whole spectrum. Totally understandable. My response was no problem. So the door is open, but my life, if I was more together back then, I might have been multitasking. I might have gotten involved in that and done some painting and taken up music and a lot of other things. Mostly I was involved with getting from one day to the next because it did not have a happy childhood. It was not a happy home.
You did go through a period where you went to school. You ended up, like you were saying, you got a degree in physics and you were living a relatively normal life. And this was, similar to what I was going through until back in one of the first books, just for example here to illustrate it, was The Report on Unidentified Flying Objects by Edward Ruppelt. So this is like way back in the 60s. And then the Lorenzens and Frank Edwards and Kehoe and all the rest. And then I just, oh yeah, like you, sure, this like, for sure, this is all happening. But it wasn't until I was probably into my 30s that, you know, someone just asked me at work one day, so what do you think of UFOs? And I started talking about it and didn't realize that there was these widely different opinions. As a kid, I just figured everybody knew about them. So that's kind of what happened to me. It was like, what? The rest of the world doesn't know this. So, you know.
Yeah, there's a difference here, though. I was reading science fiction, and I was noting things that turned up in the press, like the Look magazine article, things like that about the subject. I wasn't reading books about the ET issue, the UFO issue. I wasn't doing that. So you got a more intense engagement. So mine was not quite there. But I was convinced it was true. And I'm thinking the government will tell us about it, so I don't need to get into that. And I went about doing other things. As I'm approaching the age of 49, though, I'm starting to read some books about this. I'm getting drawn into it more. And again, the abduction book by Mack was probably the key.
Oh, yeah. Mack was excellent.
Yeah, that was
a real loss for us to have that, sure. Can be gone.
We've lost a lot of people. But again, but not just the book. The fact that I read the book and that turned me, that presented the opportunity, because it was in the back of the book where they list the organization, PEER, Program for Extraordinary Experience Research, and contacted them and had that door into the issue. If I don't take that door into the issue, then I don't end up here. I may have gone to a conference or two, and who knows, might have. I don't know what would have happened.
Then you okay? So you contacted, what was this group again?
A Program for Extraordinary Experience Research was the organization that Mack set up once he started getting into working with contactees, which was facilitated by Bud Hopkins, but he had been dealing with some of this, and then Bud really got him going, and then he decided to make it. He had multiple organizations. One was the key one. His name escapes me right now. And this was a subgroup in that, and they had an office in Cambridge. His office was up at the Cambridge University Hospital, Harvard Hospital, Cambridge. And so there's a formal thing going on, and his intention was to publish serious papers. And he did try to get a major paper published at the New England Journal of, Science Journal. And they just refused him several times. In fact, they got pretty irritated by it. And he turned that paper into the book, Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens. So this was a formal organization. There was no other organization like it at the time.
So how did you interact with them? Like, did you go in and start attending meetings yourself, or
no? Not meetings. They are an organization. They have funding. And I had a business background, entrepreneurial type business background, and so I persuaded them maybe I could be helpful in development, which ultimately means trying to raise money and things like that. So I'm there. I'm learning what's going on. I'm interacting with people, and I'm thinking about how they could do this or how they can do that. When you're volunteering, anything is possible.
I know about that.
I'm volunteering. And the idea is that you volunteer in an organization, and then if it works out and you fit well, that's the great thing about the volunteer approach. Then they bring you in, and maybe you're being paid. It's all been good. But it wasn't a fit. This is a very academic-type operation, loaded with PhDs. I did not have a PhD. And I was not a researcher. And ultimately, just wasn't a fit. It's okay. So now what am I going to do next? But I had a start. I had a platform. That internal activist that I always was, that I never really pursued, it was plugged back in my subconscious, sort of came forward and said, Steve, you're an activist, and this issue requires an activist, so why don't you go and activate?
Started Paradigm Research Group then?
That's when I left for, because I've lived in, I had family in Washington for many years. I've been in and out of Washington. I'll go back to when I was a kid. I knew it well, and I had a place to stay because of a family home. And so I headed on down there. I had free rent. I remember I volunteered up at the pier, so I'm not getting paid anything. And when I finally got to Bethesda on July the 4th, I actually drove into Bethesda on July the 4th, 1996. I had 18 cents in the gas in the car. That's all I had. But I had a free place to live and free food. So that has characterized my path here, because unlike others in the field, I neglected to make a great deal of money prior to doing this. And so I entered with nothing, which limited substantially what I could do and how fast I might integrate into the issue. But fortunately for me, remember, this is 1996. The internet was happening and the World Wide Web was coming. And that was the godsend, because the internet and World Wide Web makes it possible for you to do amazing things with virtually no money at all.
Awesome. Okay, we've got a break coming up. So this is stuff we don't normally get to hear, and I'd like to pick up on it again after the break, if you don't mind. This is wonderful.
Stephen Bassett joining us. We're learning a lot more about Stephen than I ever knew before, and I'm really happy we're covering this area. More to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what Dr. Joe has to say.
Hypertension runs in my family, unfortunately. I started having problems a number of years ago, and I had heard the commercials a number of times, and I personally do not like the idea of being on medication. Even though I'm a physician, you would think, you know, that's our thing, but we just don't like it. So I figured, you know, I'll start the product, and I did, and I gotta tell you, it does help. By the grace of God and that product, you know, my labs come back really good all the time, right on the money. I used to always have like cold toes in the winter time, and I used to love going down to Florida for my medical conferences. But since I've been taking the product regularly, I don't have that problem anymore. You got a great product there, Don, and I just wanted to tell you how appreciative I am. Thank you so much.
To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendover.